We're joined from Washington by Minnesota's U.S. Senator Al Franken. Good to have you back, sir.
Great to be back.
Well, let's get right to it. We're going to cut to the chase today. Where do we stand on the extension of unemployment benefits? As I understand it, there's a vote today.
We had a cloture vote Monday, I guess. Mm-hmm. So that means there's a vote today. And so, you know, cloture was invoked, and we'll vote to pass the extension of unemployment benefits and the COBRA subsidies, and it'll be retroactive.
What's the period of time? I mean, how long do the extensions last?
I'm not sure how long this one is. Basically, we tend to do these sometimes they're 30 days, sometimes they're several months. Mm-hmm. I hope it's as long as possible. We have a lot of people in, this is long-term unemployment, and we've had more of that and more severe long-term unemployment in this recession, this great recession, than we've had in, I think, since the Great Depression. And so there are people who, through no fault of their own, have lost their job and can't find one. And the only thing keeps food on the table is unemployment insurance.
Now, the Associated Press is reporting that this vote is a one-month extension. Now,
it's a one-month?
Yeah. Does that mean you have to go back and do this all over again?
Yeah. To us, this is emergency spending. And the issue here is, you know, there are some, we've now had Jim Bunning and now Tom Coburn threaten to block this, saying that it needs to be paid for. But traditionally, we've never emergency unemployment insurance has never been something that it's considered an emergency, and we do it without the PAYGO provisions.
Well, let's talk about health care overhaul legislation. Now, much of this is phased in over time, but what kicks in soon?
Well, a number of things. First of all, about 500,000 kids in Minnesota will be able to stay on their parents' insurance plans until they're 26. And kids will now no longer be able, starting immediately, will not be subject to pre-existing condition exclusions. So if your child has a juvenile diabetes or something like that, you can get insurance and won't be punished in terms of higher premium for that. Seniors, we're going to start the process of closing the donut hole for them, and they'll also be able to get free preventive care. And that's about 750,000 Minnesota seniors. Mm-hmm. Small businesses will be able to get tax credits for, it's about, I think, over 70,000 Minnesota small businesses, and this will help make coverage more affordable. They'll get up to 35% subsidy on the premiums that they pay.
So there, when a small business is providing health care to its employees, then they're going to get reimbursed a portion of that?
That's exactly right. If they pay, I think, over 50% of their employees' health insurance premiums, they get up to a 35% subsidy on that. And they aren't mandated to do this unless they're above 50 employees. Mm-hmm. But if they do that, most people who are without health insurance work for small businesses. So that's why generous subsidies for small businesses so that they can compete. Of course, eventually, they'll be able to join these exchanges, which won't be up and running until 2013, 2014. But when they are, a small business that has, say, 20 employees, and, you know, if you have 20 employees and one gets really sick, you're premiums shoot up, but we're going to have this exchange, which is it'll be state exchanges where you'll be able to join. It's like a menu of health insurance plans, and you'll be able to join instead of having a risk pool of 20, you'll have a risk pool of tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands. And basically, small businesses pay on average 18% more per employee than large businesses, and this will even that. So there's a lot for small business in this. Also, health insurance companies will be accountable for the amount of the premium that goes toward health care coverage. It'll be at 85% for large groups. And then what that means is 85% of the premiums that are paid in will have to go to actual health care and not to profits and to administration and to marketing.
Well, now, to your mind, what are the biggest misconceptions about the health care bill that are floating around out there?
I think some of the misconceptions are that it's a government takeover of healthcare. I think that's one of the biggest. This is actually the largest expansion of private health insurance. We've kept this as private health insurance. You know, 32 million new Americans will be able to get health insurance. And these are people who have been going to emergency rooms for their health care, which is the most expensive and least cost-effective way of getting health care. We all pay for that. We pay about $1,000 for every premium that's paid. So this is not a government takeover at all. We're using the existing system and expanding on it. I think that's one of the... There are no death panels. There's nobody going to tell grandma, you know, that you got to pull the plug on grandma. That's apocryphal. And so there's been a lot of misconceptions put forward. I don't know to what extent people have been putting them forward actually know that they're not true or whether they just are misinformed.
Mm-hmm. Let's switch to the START Treaty. I understand you have some interest in that.
Oh, yeah. I've been talking about the START Treaty. This is the first treaty that we've negotiated actually with the Russians since the Soviet Union fell apart. And it's really about reducing by about a third. That's a significant number of warheads that we have pointed at each other. And I think that's a good thing. We're also, you saw the summit yesterday, which right. was very effective. And that was, the president got about 40 countries together to talk about securing loose nuclear material. And that's so important because this was the world coming together and saying we're not going to let terrorists get a hold of loose nuclear material. And, of course, right after the fall of the Soviet Union, the Nunn-Lugar bill was put together, and Senator Lugar wisely said we got to secure loose nuclear material in the former Soviet Union. And this is building on that, and we had a worldwide consensus that this is something we really need to put real focus on, is not letting loose nuclear material get into the hands of terrorists.
Well, finally, before I let you go, how are we doing on bipartisanship in the Senate?
Well, sometimes it depends on the issue. We didn't have as much success, as you know, in bipartisanship on health care. But, for example, we're having hearings now on reauthorizing the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, known as No Child Left Behind. I think that's going to be very bipartisan. My colleagues on both sides are in large agreement on many of the fixes that have to be made. So that's good. You know, we'll see what on Wall Street reform. I hope there will be bipartisanship on that. That's very important. So nothing like what happened, like led to this recession, this deep recession, that doesn't happen again. That we'll see. And then on energy, I'm looking forward to, I know that Lindsey Graham is working with Senators Kerry and Lieberman on a bill that for address climate change, but also and also just address our energy needs. And I think that'll create a lot of jobs and be very good for Minnesota.
Well, it sounds like you've got a busy few weeks ahead of you, and we'll let you get on with that. And we've been speaking with Senator Al Franken. It's always good to speak with you. Thanks for being with us this morning.
Well, great.